From the Film Grok Studios in beautiful downtown Studio City, this is Film Grok. Our movie this week is American Psycho. Joining me in the Psycho Room this week is...
Michael Smith.
And...
Leah Tuttle.
And...
Duncan K. Fraser.
And my name is Psycho Serge Delpierre. Our cue point for American Psycho is... All right, so when the Lionsgate logo fades, actually, it's going to go away and fade into white, completely to white. As soon as it fades completely to white, pause it there. That's where we have it paused, and we're going to talk just a little bit while you do that. And then when we're ready to go, I'll count down 3, 2, 1, play, and then... We'll hit play, and we'll be going, and then you can hit play, and you can listen to us in sync with American Psycho, or you can listen to this while you're jogging or mowing the lawn, or...
Eating pudding pops.
Or...
Killing someone in a rain slicker while dancing to Huey Lewis. If somebody could actually listen to this while doing that, that would be the greatest thing ever.
That is so dark. Or...
How many levels of life imitating art would that be?
So meta.
That's so meta.
So meta. That would be way, way too much.
What would I be doing while listening to this?
Yes. Dude, are you growing a beard?
Goatee, but yes.
A goat?
Thank you.
Nice, okay.
This just hasn't been shit. My girlfriend likes it.
Very nice. Very nice.
Thanks.
Okay, so what we... Never mind. Okay, well, you can tell us later. You can think about what you'd be doing. So, American Psycho. Who's seen this film before?
I have.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, me. I haven't seen this. Oh, my God. Okay, well, I'll talk about that after. Okay, so let's go first, Leah.
What would you like me to know?
What? Leah,
yes.
When was the first time you saw this film?
You know, I don't remember. I had read the book 5 or 6 times, I believe, and then I saw the movie. I know that disturbs people when I tell them that sometimes, that I really, really enjoy
really
the book.
Savoring, like, the rat scene there.
So the book is good?
Yeah. The book is very good. It's very graphic.
I know you and I had talked about it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's what they call, you know, sort of unfilmable. There's a lot of things in the book that you just...
Does it have pictures?
The book? No.
Yes. No.
That would be interesting.
Children's book version of American Psycho. Yes, okay.
But I actually think the movie does a really good job, because I was skeptical, as were, I think, a lot of fans of the book. They thought, how are they going to do this? And I think the director and the writer did a really good job.
Wow.
And Christian Bale is good.
Yes, I'm sorry. I was just indicating for Lee not to tap the table, because we can hear it in the... microphone. That's
won't
okay.
Touch it ever again.
Great. That's it. We're done.
Don't get the wire hanger, please.
That's a different movie. Michael?
I saw the movie in the theater, and I had read the book a couple years before and was a big fan of the book. I had sort of an interesting experience in seeing it in the theater, and I saw it in a theater in Burbank, and there were maybe 2 dozen other people with me in the theater. I laughed my ass off through the entire movie, and I got about halfway through and I suddenly realized I was the only one in the theater laughing. I don't know if everybody else just wasn't into it, missed the joke or whatever it was, but I was sitting there laughing hysterically as, you know, all these dark bloody scenes were going on. I just thought, what these people must think of me. So that was kind of my experience to seeing that in the theater.
Clearly you're more American than anyone else in there.
Apparently, yeah.
Just saying. Americans like to laugh at blood and stuff.
I don't think so, because I don't think a lot of people get satire. And I could see how some people could maybe not. If you went to the theater,
totally.
If you went to the movie theater seeing something like American Psycho, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to see like an axe wielding, you know, chainsaw,
right.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and then you know, it's all about happening on Wall Street. And you're like, what?
Well, and I think if I remember right, I don't think it was advertised really as a satire. It seems like it was really advertised more
as
like
a slasher flick. That post, let me tell you, the poster for this movie is the worst poster I've ever seen in my entire life. I hate that poster.
The one with the knife with his reflection in the knife?
I mean, I like the idea, but it's a bad poster. I've just never seen such poorly. I mean, I apologize to whoever did it. They did per instructions, but the whole idea just doesn't...
Yeah, it's funny how they market things. Like, for instance... that new Sorcerer's Apprentice that came out with Nick Cage and all that, right? Disney did that film. You wouldn't know that from the initial previews because it made it look like a Nick Cage magic action film, right?
Right.
Well, now that it's Christmas, they don't even show Nick Cage in the preview. They show the young kid, and they make it up like a Disney kind of thing. Like, it looks like a totally different film.
Jay Baruchel, who's really a good actor.
I mean, it's hard to sell a satire, though. It's hard to sell, like, something cerebral, basically, to the general populace. So I could see why they would do that, but... You definitely get a crowd in there that was like, this isn't what I came to see. I was really hoping for some scary stuff.
Exactly.
Now I have to think, and there's blood and weirdness.
Wait, now, when did you see this, Duncan?
Well, interesting story. Christian Bale wasn't even really on my radar until Batman Begins, because I've always been into Batman, and I was trying to think of how someone could beat, you know, Michael Keaton in the first Tim Burton Batman. And I saw it, and I was very impressed. So then I'm like, well, hell, what else has this guy done? So first I realized that he was in A Midsummer Night's Dream, the revamp with all-star cast recently.
Really?
Yeah, he was the I forget the name of the guy, but basically the love interest that wasn't interested in the girl he had wooed, who was supposed to be married to... Never mind. Anyway,
Lysander or Demetrius? One of the two.
Demetrius.
Yeah, thank you. So he was in that, and I always loved that movie, but I never thought about it. And then someone said, hey, American Psycho is like really, really good example of like his, you know, acting chops. And so I went to see that. That and Equilibrium, which was actually a really cool action flick.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen Equilibrium?
I have none.
Oh. No. It's good. It's also a little bit cerebral for an action flick. It has a couple of flaws, but really cool action-y stuff for Christian Bale. So that's what prompted me to watch this film was someone said, hey, and I was very impressed. Like, not just with his skill, but with just like the whole, you know, what they were tackling, what they were talking about in the film. Yeah.
I hadn't seen this. I know in talking to all of you, especially you, Leah, as we talked about American Psycho, you're like, oh yes, we got to do this film. Like, okay, I mean, I knew about it. I'd bought the book back in the 90s. I was a big Bret Easton Ellis fan, and I had read Less Than Zero and, what was it, Rules of Attraction. So I'd gotten this, and I just hadn't gotten around to. And I remember just when it came out, there was the whole thing about, like, oh, this book, and then the movie, the whole story of the movie. And just somehow I never got to it. And so, true confession, I watched half of it before y'all came over. So I got about halfway through. The rest is going to be all a surprise to me.
Naughty host. Naughty.
What do you mean naughty? This is a good experience.
Read the book.
This is going to be good for me. Well, I'm going to read the book afterwards because I know you know. I mean, and I can see as I was watching the film that, but we'll talk about some more there. Okay, so enough blather, pre-blather. We're going to now start this sucker up. So, ladies and gentlemen, please raise your remotes. Point it at your favorite, whatever, playback machine. And I'm going to count down 3, 2, 1. Play.
So I have a question. Now that we've taken as much time as we have for the pre-blather, as Serge puts it, where would you all be in your activities that you had stated while listening to this?
I'm not
trying.
Sure.
What?
Like the guy in the rain slicker who's killing people.
Yeah.
Would he be done with one person moving on to the next by now?
Well, no. He would be still bored? Be gearing up. I mean, that would take some time.
That's true.
That's you don't just don't stumble in a room and have that all together.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because I watch Dexter, so I know.
Speaking of Dexter, I mean, this beginning, when I was looking at it, I was thinking, okay, this better be blood, or it better be some really good food. Because I was thinking, this is exactly what Dexter is.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a direct connection between this and Dexter. There is some level of inspiration. In fact, it's either the first or second season, one of Dexter's aliases is Patrick Bateman.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I totally missed that. Totally missed that reference. But yeah, I can see that because like Dexter opens with food that's shot
He's
to look
breakfast.
Like
yeah.
it's violent, you know, very
right.
clever.
But what's great about great. This beginning, at least for me, is that it basically, it works and I feel the whole thing. I mean, watching it is a big, it basically equates exceeding excessive wealth.
Yeah, the excess of the 80s. You get that right from the first few episodes.
It equates excessive wealth with basically those same murderous instincts.
Visceral pleasures.
Well, because especially at the beginning here, the way they're describing all the menu, all the stuff on the menu makes everyone, you know, look, all these people look like animals or sound like animals.
Before we see our hero for... lack of a better word there.
Our protagonist.
I almost like hero in this. in any case, I read yesterday that, and I didn't know this until I read this, is that the inspiration for his performance in this, he said what he had seen an interview with Tom Cruise on David Letterman, and that the energy and gleefulness of Tom Cruise with the lack of anything there in the eyes was something that really got him going in terms of forming his character for this.
It's fantastic.
Wow.
So when we watch this, let's all watch this as Tom Cruise as the psycho killer.
That's
Wait, which movie was that again? I was totally into like thinking about some of the.
It was an interview, basically.
Oh, Interview with the Vampire?
No.
An interview.
Just an interview on like David Letterman or something that he saw, and just did the way. He was acting just as himself, as Tom Cruise.
Right.
The sort of gleeful and the energy, and like, then there not being much there.
So he's channeling Tom Cruise in this? That is so weird. Well, because, I mean, this first scene actually is really interesting because he's acting so concerned. He's like basically saying, you can't, you know, he's acting like a moral person.
Yes.
But you can kind of feel he's acting it. But the interesting thing is he still thinks it's important to act that way, whereas these guys are completely immoral anyway. As opposed to him being amoral.
One of the big questions to consider in this movie too, and it's ambiguous even at the end, that you get a lot more of, I think, in the book than you do in the movie, is what is the reliability of our narrator? How much can we trust in what he says and does and his actions?
Well, here, I mean, he does have some narration, but it's mostly, this is film is mostly through his point of view, at least to the point where I got through to. And are you telling me
let's leave that question open for now, and then we'll revisit it at the end. I just want to pose that,
okay,
and then we can sort of revisit that at the end.
Okay.
It's interesting. I think the novel is less ambiguous than the film.
And less ambiguous in terms of what?
Whether or not he's actually doing this or not.
What do you mean? Whether he's actually doing the killing?
Yeah.
See, if you'd watch the whole film.
Yeah, if you'd watch the whole film.
Oh.
You would know.
God.
Really cool. I just blew your mind.
I'm excited about what I'm gonna see. Well, because here, the first clue is like, okay, it's the shot in the mirror. We see him talking in the mirror, so it's like, well, was that in his mind, or... You know, did he? Well, obviously, he didn't say it because she didn't hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Michael, good point. And I would add to that, if we really could hear flat out someone else's thoughts or get inside someone else's mind, how much could we trust that? Even coming straight from the person.
And,
right?
You know, it's
their perspective on their world.
Which is what's cool about this is that goes to the whole idea of the unreliable narrator in literature. Which is rarely ever explored in American movie making.
You're seeing it more and more often. Black Swan, I haven't seen yet, but I'm told is a similar degree of an unreliable narrator in a film.
Fight Club's a good example of an unreliable narrator.
And also works in the film, too.
Kind of weird.
Right.
Unreliable.
Yeah. For me, this film either succeeds or fails with...
There's your abs.
With his performance, and I think he just got it spot on with the character.
He's in good shape. He's in good shape.
There you go. You got abs and an ass shot.
See,
good for you.
This movie's got it all.
It's all.
I do own it on Blu-ray.
It's all for you. Oh, wow. By the way, folks, one thing I think I forgot to mention: this is the unrated version. So I think there may be like 15 seconds more stuff. So.
Someone at home right now is going, "Curse you, Serge Delpierre! Curse you!"
Thank
Started
you.
The wrong path.
This scene is so great because it's really he's putting on a mask to begin his day.
Yeah, that's great. Mm.
Yeah,
and the way it's just—I mean, what's really great about this, the screenplay is—it's all worked into what his tasks are, into who he is, and then also there's a symbolic level, which is great, especially when he pulls it off.
Yeah,
but also this points out that his exceeding narcissism, which is all part of his, well, I guess his psychotic self, which is all part of, because the thing with psychotic people is that they tend to focus on very, very small, narrow details.
P.S. Mask number two in the opening scene.
Get obsessed with them. And which is exactly what he does. He gets obsessed with, at least from what I've seen so far, he's gotten obsessed with the cards, the trouble that people have gotten into over
the clothes,
over
and the food,
and the watch. Don't touch the watch. Yeah. Those are the things that are important.
Mm. And two, it's pretty well known that serial killers always have like a ritualistic routine that they do. Mm-hmm.
But that's part of it too, the obsession with details.
Right, right.
Because that's
like an expression of the obsession with details.
Yeah. Oh, I remember when these headphones came in.
Yeah.
I thought it was like, what the hell are people doing walking around with those? And now it's all earbuds, so I think it's just kind of funny he does that.
We're talking about detail and stuff. In the book, there are whole chapters about food, clothes,
music.
Is it specifically devoted to it?
Like, yes. I think there's an entire chapter on Whitney Houston.
There's an entire chapter on Phil Collins and an entire chapter on Huey Lewis, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
So basically, they took all that and then kind of spread it out throughout the whole thing. Yeah, because this whole thing about Phil Collins.
What they order, what labels they're wearing. It's
my God.
And the restaurants. Detail. Restaurants go on and on and on about.
And there's the same amount of detail when he describes killing people. Yeah. Specifically women, actually. Not so much the men, but when he kills women.
Which is exactly the point of the book, is that's the kind of detail that he applies to the same type of thing.
And I think, for me, I do love the movie, but when you remove as much violence as they have, it does take... There's something like a multidimensional quality that's there in the book that does get lost in the translation here by removing a lot of this stuff. You lose something of him in the movie version.
Mm-hmm.
The 80s satire and cultural satire is still there, but in terms of the character, you do kind of lose something without that, whether you believe it's that deep of fantasy or that deep of psychosis. Then it's something is just kind of lost in translation.
But there's only so much you can, only so much.
Right.
I mean, that's what movies are about. Movies are about masks. You can only see the outside and then get a hint of what's on the inside, whereas a book can take you into someone's mind. And so this essentially becomes based on the book. And when I saw this, I'm like, Reese Witherspoon's in this?
Right, I saw that in credits earlier. I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot, totally.
He's listening to the new Robert Palmer tape. Oh my God. You know, it's funny. You have movies that try and set themselves in the 80s. I've got to say, this, I think, is probably the most successful because it like plants you in like the cultural touchstones of the time to say, this is what it was. Oh, that's right. I remember that.
I think they filmed this in Toronto, though, didn't they?
Oh, did they?
Yeah, I don't think this is actually New York.
Bad.
Don't quote me on that one, though.
Okay, all right. Well, it's likely.
And that kind of sets the pace for his character, in large part.
That he wants to fit in.
Mm-hmm.
And in the very beginning when they're arguing over who Paul Allen is, which plays a big part later, when they can't really tell each other apart.
Yeah, there's a lot of identity confusion.
You couldn't. I was like, they all look
the
same.
And it happens throughout the entire movie.
Yeah.
They get mistaken for other people,
but also that's also part of narcissism. I mean, every chance, I think in this scene also, he looks in the whatever the brushed metal menu here. He tries to look at himself. Mm-hmm. Wait, it's the shot's coming up right now, and he doesn't look at the menu. He's looking at himself, and he's checking his hair.
It's great hair.
And this is the start of his voiceover, I guess. Oh, no, the second part of his voiceover.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Samantha Mathis. What's good about this is that we're able to get get an idea of who everyone is, but through his narration, which fits in with the whole motif of this all. Oh, that's Justin Theroux also, who was in Mulholland Drive, I think a year later.
Right.
I mean, I can't decide whether he sounds sanctimonious or not. But he's saying the words, but it's got no conviction behind it. Mm-hmm. You're wondering.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He says that right after he's talking to his secretary about wear skirt and high heels.
That's part of the sexism of the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's part of his psychosis, or whatever you want to call it. And his narcissism, actually, still goes all back to that. And all these people, I mean, all these people are about conspicuous consumption. It's all about
and,
that.
You know, that would have been interesting or funny, even if you just turned around and said, okay, now that we're not talking about that other thing, let's just have some dinner.
Yeah.
You know.
Now, this scene was interesting, where he's walking along. I thought it was well shot.
almost expect the Joker's thugs to jump out and get him right.
Or expected something. It's like, was he going to walk about, you know, walk up behind her and do something? And is he going to try and pick her up or something? And she's just kind of brushing him off. So that means just think it's. And he just smiles. You got a little bit of sinister music coming in.
And creepy little singing voice in the background.
Right?
Oh, that's right.
It's like
basically
if it's dark and you hear children singing, something
it's
is
scary.
Really
it's
about to go down.
Right. And then, but then she, you know, it's like this very subtle thing, which is really cool. She walks with him and I'm going, okay, what's gonna, and then we have this. I'm like, is that blood on the sheet? Did he kill her or not? I mean, that's what he says. It could be cranapple, I guess.
It's a little chunky for cranberry juice.
You see, this kind of threw me off. I mean, because he's always under such control, and he's actually going off on her. And then this woman, who's this woman, by the way? Or do we even ever find out?
I think it's like an ex-girlfriend.
Okay.
I don't remember.
Well, that's something that you see. And you see more towards the end here, too, is that's what's underneath the surface is he's completely out of control.
Oh, I'm totally getting. Well, he's even says, you know, his bloodlust is increasing daily. He is so trying to blow her off. Which is really cool because they planted that when he saw his reflection in the poster
totally.
Of Les Mis. Does that play?
Have
in
a whole conversation about what that means.
Does the Les Mis play in the book?
You know, I don't remember.
Les Mis does come up several times in the book, if I remember right.
Oh, there she is again, Samantha. Well, and what he's just got porn playing in the back.
Just casually.
I know.
It's either that or a Texas Chainsaw.
That's right.
What I'm kind of surprised at is just... I'm just kind of surprised that he's got such a small television.
But actually, you know, you're right. He would have had a projection TV at that time.
That would have
been
the best.
But they take up a lot of room, too. Or they took up a lot of room.
1987.
Oh, 1987. That's
the way
it is.
That's pretty cool.
I wonder if that's vintage porn.
Vintage?
It's in like 1987.
Hard to tell.
Yeah.
You know... It's interesting that he's so intent on pleasing her, Courtney.
Cena reminds me of that L.A. Story when he calls to get a reservation.
Major
D just laughs at him.
Oh, right.
See, I thought for sure.
That video. It's been too long.
See, now watching it, I thought for sure he's going to go down and get the maitre d'. He's going to nail him. But I guess that's not important. And it took me a while to figure out what he was doing. But I'm like, oh, I get it now. This is a great shot.
Yeah, like,
look at that.
Almost like talks about his emotional mood, like he's starting to like leave.
But also how he's—I mean, visual, but also how he's separated from the world.
Oh yeah,
you know he's like fuzzy because he says later,
"She's real, he's not.
I'm not here.
I'm not here."
Yeah, blah blah blah. There's all this and this and that, but I am not here. She did a really good job in this film. She really did. It's a shame that she hasn't worked more. And that is a nice dress she's wearing.
Barcadia. It sounds like it should be a burger joint with video games. Barcadia.
I like that.
Maybe I'll open a restaurant called that.
Oh, this scene.
Oh, that's brilliant.
But, It's like, buddy, it's funny how he never got it. He never got it that this guy had it for him.
Man crush.
More than man crush.
He looks so soft.
And
this guy looks like him.
Well, and then like...
Oh,
So this, but this is Jared Leto.
Mm-hmm.
Totally did not recognize him. Mm. Totally did not. And he'd been in Fight Club the year before. Wow. Oh, and here come the cards.
Oh, yeah, the cards.
Yep.
And here's where the whole card thing starts.
Yeah, you really start to see his obsessiveness.
Well, it has to do with more with, I mean, I guess it has to do with social standing. You know, basically his card needs to be, I mean, I guess his narcissism dictates that he needs to have the finest taste. He needs to be the best.
Mm-hmm. Like bone.
That's right. Well, I like that they work at Pierce and Pierce. I mean, that's a joke in and of itself.
Wow. Such a different, whole different context even than today. This is almost starting to become a period piece just from what they're talking about. Going to his office, there's no computer on the desk. He's talking about picking up business cards from the printer, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And now it'd be about phones and everything else.
Right.
Technological,
basically.
But I mean, this is great because this works on several different levels. One, it works on the whole level of them actually competing amongst each other, but then it also works on the level of him having to be the best, but also being so obsessed about tiny, tiny details and status.
And the general just narcissism and neurosis of the entire group.
That's
they're
great,
all
yeah.
looking at white cards with black type. Yeah. And somehow they see all these intricate things that matter.
All these slight differences.
And look at him.
It's like foiled. How could he get me?
Jeepers.
And then we go right to like the sinister.
Right.
We've got the light coming out of
this
the alley.
Definitely
with the light.
Has a Batman feel to it. I'm just saying.
And
see,
he goes.
Look, that's right where Bruce Wayne's parents got killed. Like right around the left. There.
I can see that because
the back entrance to the Opera House is.
That's right, because they needed to go around the corner because they parked the car because they didn't want to pay for valet.
Right.
That's right. So the lesson is always pay for valet. Now, this scene confused me a little because here's someone with no status.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone who's down and out. I mean, I know it's picking on the whole thing of, like, you know, rich people who can't sympathize and, oh, you're homeless, therefore you're useless, and I'm going to kill you. And your dog, too.
That about sums it up, I think.
Well,
I mean, but it kind of went outside of what I'd been expecting. In other words, for me, it felt like he would kill, you know, like he later does, at least so it appears, people of status so he can advance.
But he kills hookers.
Yeah, I mean. Oh.
Maybe you haven't gotten that far.
Yeah. Damn it. Well, this is reminding me of a film actually from the 80s, late 80s, early 90s, called Shock to the System with Michael Caine. I don't know if any of you are familiar with it, where basically he plays some executive at some company. It's a British film. And I saw this a long time ago, so I apologize. And where basically he accidentally kills someone and he finds, oh, I didn't feel bad, and basically starts killing his way to the top of the company. I think at the end he probably gets caught or something or gets away.
Wait, is it a comedy?
Kind of thing. It's a black. It's serious with
like,
that.
That sounds hilarious.
With British humor. You should check it out to see what it is.
Okay.
It's called Shock to the System. And that's what made me think of, I mean, this is working a little more complexly, but that's what made me thought of at least this stuff.
Well, that's kind of the point, too. It's, you know, the...
And this is the satirical part, I guess. Oh, the dog.
Well, it's the book and the film, you know, are more than a satire. And I think it comes out a little bit more in the book that, you know, if it was just a straight-up satire, he would only kill, you know, all these... He would just kill yuppies. I mean,
right,
and
right,
it would
right.
sort of exist on that plane.
Right.
But the book was written when Ellis was in this really weird, dark place and just sort of consumed by 80s culture and felt isolated by all this sort of stuff going around him. And so this character kind of comes out of that. So it's not just about the satire. It's really about how, you know, that the culture of the time, there's something insidious about the culture. So to just make it a satire, I don't think would have gotten that across as much as what he does with the character. It's funny, but that there is something really problematic about that kind of consumer culture that is really dark and twisted in its own way.
Well, it's just been shoved down our throats for the past at least 30 years, at least. But I guess my point was it felt a little more on the nose than the other stuff. That's all. I'm not saying it's – once again, I have not seen the whole thing, so maybe it'll come all around. But that's all. It just felt a little more on the nose. Like, of course he would do something like that. Hmm. I don't know. It was just kind of – that's how it occurred to me when I watched it the first time a couple of hours ago. Hey, I got half an hour to go then. I'm just in uncharted territory. And this relationship, it's like they're what? Do they even care about each other? I mean, it's just such the most unloving, materialistic relationship ever.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
There you go. Now it's the whole thing of going out to the restaurants again. They're at the party and still already thinking about going to a restaurant.
Well, getting into Dorsia for Patrick is a big part of the book and the movie. He tries to...
Right. Well, I guess getting in, once again, it's status. Getting into these restaurants is status, and that's where he tried to get into Dorsia, and he was pushed down in terms of status. Because that's what... That tips him over the edge with... What's his face? With Paul Allen.
Mm-hmm.
Is because Paul Allen got his table at Dorsia.
Yeah.
What?
Man.
I got to remember to use that.
Not if you want to keep
this
your
week.
Spleen. The dude's just trying to do his job. But I guess to these captains of industry.
What does that even mean?
You know, there's actually a restaurant in Santa Monica called South.
Okay,
and it's very similar to this.
Wait a minute. Okay, maybe that was a little hint. Because he said, "What are you talking about, Patrick? I mean, Marcus."
Because Paul Allen thinks he's having dinner with Marcus Halberstam.
He was talking to himself in that moment, like he was narrating to himself.
And he forgot that he was supposed to be Marcus.
But he forgot, right.
Because remember in the business card scene, Paul Allen says, Marcus, blah, blah, blah. He thinks he's someone else.
Oh, he doesn't.
So he's pretending to be someone else.
Oh, so he doesn't know that he's Patrick Bateman? I completely missed that.
Mm-mm.
I missed that the first time and the second time. But wouldn't anyone else... Oh, because Paul Allen is not amongst... them and no one else caught on that he thought that he was Marcus.
Oh, look, he just brought
up. I think
up
they
his,
all don't pay attention, and it's all they all look the same and act the same.
No, now this is interesting. He's now gotten him that guy to talk about Patrick Bateman.
Patrick, right.
What a dork! Like, who does he think Patrick is?
Oh, here we go.
Which one's Patrick?
This is by far my favorite scene in the entire movie.
Right.
Oh, this is such a weird, freaky scene. The way he talks about music.
That painting or print or whatever with the guy in the suit falling in his apartment, I find really interesting.
Oh, yeah.
I keep meaning to look up who did that.
Like, he's like, I'm going now.
Jets away. Yeah. Just
And this is what you get so much of in the book, is just pages and pages of this commentary on music. And
so funny.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's interesting that he's...
He's walking
backwards.
Now, what I don't get, okay, so he puts the raincoat on.
Shiny ass.
But he doesn't do anything to protect his shoes or his pants or right. his hair and his face.
Right.
I'm just saying.
Right. Well, clearly he's not practiced or researched at this.
I got the impression that he was. Or maybe not. Maybe he's escalating and he still doesn't quite know.
Mm-hmm. And this,
or it's
this
not
scene,
happening.
It makes him what? It makes him seem so oh. much more
just
psycho.
Watch the movie, Serge.
I'm gonna watch a movie. But I mean, it for me, I'm sorry, it looks like it's happening. You're saying, Duncan?
Just saying it makes him seem so much more psycho yeah. that this is the first time he's shown any positive emotion in the whole film.
Mm-hmm.
This very
you know, you're
scene.
Right. Oh, my God. This was just like, what the hell?
Right?
What the hell?
You know, he may have put the raincoat on just so that his favorite tie didn't get stained. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it may
nice
not
suit?
Really be put practical. You put, like, some newspaper around it. No. You hit someone with an axe that many times, it's in the whole room.
Yeah.
It's also kind of a camera gag, too, because now you get this guy in this really nice clean suit with just
right.
this blood-spattered face.
Right, right.
So.
I don't know if gag is even the right word. I mean, it's... It, that would be a great poster right there, you know? But,
yeah.
like, it,
yep.
it just what that communicates. I think gag is, like, too light a word. I think
yeah,
you're right.
No, you're,
just,
you're right.
You know,
right.
It's portraiture almost. It's almost, you know, it's high art.
Now,
nice.
That's a gag.
Yeah, that's a gag. Okay, that's a gag. Now, look at the floor in the back now. No blood.
Oh, mm-hmm. Bad continuity. Or, you know what?
Or
try it out before he get. No,
well,
probably
or
not.
If it's all happening in his mind.
Yeah.
Ah, yes.
Because how could he possibly get away?
Right.
Yes, yes.
Or like the, with the chainsaw in the stairwell thing.
What? Right. You know what? Now, thinking about it now, I think you probably are right. It is less ambiguous when I think about sort of the ending of this film and where it goes. And sort of the levels that it goes to, then in the book, they really do leave you with some more ambiguous kinds of points.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, just that scene right there, by the way, and I'm mm-hmm. sorry if I might have missed some of what you said because I was totally in it right then, but
mm-hmm.
what would be the chances of that guy stopping by right then when he's pulling the body out and them having this random conversation, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is, I don't know. I need to watch this like 3 more times.
Now, is this the apartment he uses as the body stash that
yeah.
plays in the end? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, look at that.
There's a cell phone. Wow.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the style, like decorating style, has circled back to now, because I can totally see this decor in a modern office. Just, you know, the technology is different now.
And acid wash jeans are back too.
Yes, they are.
I still have my acid wash jean jacket from the '80s, which is an awesome jean jacket too. It keeps me really warm in the winter. If I ever bring
bust
it out.
It
again.
Out.
All right, I'm going to ask this in complete, utter ignorance because I haven't seen the second half of the film. But Paul Allen is missing. This guy is looking for Paul Allen. So I'm just saying. I don't know. I guess I'll find out.
You'll find out.
You know, I got to say, for some reason, and this is getting more techie, But the trans lights in this, on the sets, Michael,
mm-hmm.
they look good, but then at certain angles, it totally betrays that they're trans lights. Trans lights are the, those are when you see the cityscapes yeah. in out through the windows. Those are actually images that are put up and
like big photos, but it's in the background.
Big photos, and then they're lit from behind, so it actually looks vibrant. You think that you're actually looking out on New York, as it were, here.
I you know, I never looked that closely at the trans lights.
No, and I didn't, but it just kind of caught my eye. There were some shots where it was like...
You caught a weird light or something?
Yeah. No, just the angle of it. It kind of betrayed the angle of it.
I read something, maybe it was on IMDb, that the director had Willem Dafoe for each different scene with Christian Bale. He had him play it. With one scene, he would know that he had done it. In another scene, he didn't know at all, so we sort of get that confusing every time he interacts with the detective. We're just like, what does he know or not know? Because apparently the director told him to, like, every other scene, just play it with a different tone, which I think is kind of cool, because I was always left, like, what does he know?
Right. Are you talking about when you read the book, or
No, I think I read this on IMDb Trivia or something like that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like that, he gets the question.
How does the book handle it? Because, I mean, that kind of thing would... I mean, is there an omniscient... sort of narrator in the book versus
first person.
Him.
It's first
Patrick
person.
Bale.
It's all first person.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I should read it again. It's been a few years.
Yeah, I want to go back and read it again, though. I think maybe I've gotten more sensitive as I've gotten older. The scene with the rat in the
rat.
Tube.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's in the movie?
No.
Oh.
No. Oh, a little bit of trivia. Speaking of rats and tubes. No. the woman that spearheaded the protest against the book, and I think to some degree the movie, was or is the like stepmother.
It's Gloria Steinem, right?
Yeah, Gloria Steinem.
Gloria Steinem's the one who discouraged Leo DiCaprio from doing this.
Right. Is his stepmother.
That's right. Christian Bale's stepmother.
Christian Bale's stepmother, yeah.
Go figure, it's like, hey, stepmom.
Yeah.
But it was the stuff like the rat in the tube that I think got Gloria Steinem's attention. As you can imagine on your own where the tube went.
With Patrick?
No.
But it's actually with an ex-girlfriend whose boyfriend is the chef at Dorsia. And doesn't that what that's what like sets
him
off
remember.
Or
There's
something?
There's so many that he kills off. And who?
There's a nail gun in that scene as well, if I remember correctly.
Which girl is it that he tries to make meatloaf out of her innards and it doesn't work out for him?
That might be the same one.
I think you're right.
And that's in the movie?
No.
They cut out a lot of stuff.
Like I said, it's a
but
that,
those are the kind of moments in there too. That even like the really violent stuff will have these moments where he's like trying to make meatloaf out of somebody, and you kind of laugh at it, and then you hate yourself for laughing at it because you realize how awful it really
is. It's a laugh out loud funny book, but it's also a cringe. Like,
yeah.
Ooh.
Well, I mean, I remember the reaction to it when it came out. Everyone was like,
"And
what
there are times,
is this?"
And there are times that you don't like. It gets so strange that you know you're obviously not laughing at it because it is just so violent. And then all of a sudden, it'll move to a moment where you're laughing at it, and it does leave you with this whole uneasy feeling. That's really not a lot of books I've read that have managed to kind of pull that weird blend of uneasiness and comedy at the same time.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting how they swap off sometimes. Like, for example, here, Willem Dafoe's head is bigger in the screen than Christian Bale's is in the scene. But then there was the other scene with the whole Paul Allen, when he first meets Patrick and he thinks, I guess, he's Marcus.
Mm-hmm.
There, you know, Patrick's head is, like, huge in the screen and Paul's was a little smaller. Mm. So it's interesting how they play with the sizes. I mean, I've noticed that it's more pronounced in this film. Of course, it's like, what? Right.
On nice, like, dorsal fruit. With
kind of throws you off.
I love this.
Right?
He's just working out with that.
I've never seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre, by the way.
Really?
Yeah.
It gets your heart going.
There's a lot of screaming.
I don't think I have either, actually.
I just haven't never had a desire to.
I wrote a paper on it in college.
Oh, really?
I've never been into horror films.
On family.
Which also,
okay, I can see that.
Which another thing about too, I don't know if this was intentional or not, but didn't that take place in Texarkana? And the name of the restaurant earlier was Texarkana.
Oh.
I've never made that connection until just now.
I'll be darned.
That's a good one.
Maybe this will make sense to me in the second half of the film.
Yeah.
If it's heading where I think it is.
You know, not that I've been to either place, but I find it interesting that, isn't this supposed to be New York?
Yeah.
A lot of it looks like Chicago, like with the L train and all.
Well,
earlier.
That's where it might be the Toronto thing.
Yeah, I think it's filmed.
Oh, is that where they shot this?
I think so.
According to Leah, yes.
Cheap New York.
Yeah. She gives him that look. I was like, now, is this in the book, this whole part?
Oh, he kills many hookers in the book.
Yeah, but this is, I think, Christy, I think, is her name. She's like the...
This is Christy and Sabrina.
Right, right.
Christy, this is Christy and Sabrina.
And then Christy comes into play again later. I guess you haven't seen this part yet.
No.
But it's actually the Genevieve Turner, is that her name, who's the writer, one of the co-writers of the film. She plays a part later in the movie. I'm
okay.
Pretty sure that's...
Yeah, I saw her name in the credits. I'm like, ooh, nice. Yeah. Yeah, she wrote it with Mary Harron.
Correct.
That's right. Mary Harron, who directed I Shot Andy Warhol.
He's Paul Allen.
Simply Red.
This 80s music just drives me bananas. Well.
Right. In the same exact conversation.
That's yeah, he just flows from one thing to right. the next.
So was he just somewhere else, or did he put on the tux just for this?
And he put took the tux on for this.
Okay,
just that's the way
I'd never
it.
Noticed that. Before.
You know, I hadn't thought about that.
Well, like
in other words, it was I just like special occasion.
It
I'm doing it up tonight.
It would
it's
just
two hooker
add to the,
not just one, but two with, know, and a video camera
psychoness.
She's like, I scored with this one.
Right?
Well.
He's just so superficial. It's incredible. But it's great that he was able to measure his performance like that. And she's like, oh, okay, what a surprise. So I don't remember, well, of course, because I didn't get to that part, but clearly he's trying to set up some kind of alibi for Paul having been around now
mm-hmm.
in some kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
Unless he really is Paul Allen? What?
No.
I know.
Oh, and in a conversation we were having earlier, it is, in fact, his brother, Patrick Bateman's brother, who's the lead character in Rules of Attraction.
Rules of Attraction,
Sean Bateman.
Sean Bateman. Because
yeah.
that's what Ellis wrote.
And I think one of them is referenced in Less Than Zero as well, I think.
I think so. I
a
know.
Classmate
well,
at
see, I,
Exeter or
yeah,
something like that.
Yeah, cause I read Less Than Zero, which is much different than the movie. The movie, actually,
yeah.
I think is better.
But really?
I mean, I think the book has got, it's like different.
Yeah.
I mean, because whatever, Robert Downey Jr.'s character, Julian, is like in two scenes in the book, and that's it. And he's not even part of the plot,
yeah, that's
for
right.
the most part. And they just pulled all that out. And then Rules of Attraction. I liked that book. I did not like the movie. I just thought
I've only
seen
the movie.
The movie. Read the book. Oh, the book is definitely worth reading. And they're actually Clay.
Here we go with the pill gum.
In the book, Clay from Less Than Zero has mm-hmm. a part in Rules of Attraction. It's a small part,
right.
But he drifts through it.
And I love in his choice of music how he puts so much thought and time and sort of cerebral energy into these artists that are kind of one-dimensional artist in a lot of cases.
Pop, yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, he talks about Duke being undisputed masterpiece. I think it was like a pop breakthrough, and that's about it.
His whole thing on Huey Lewis, and even misinterprets one-dimensional things. He says of Huey Lewis that it's like the message is about conformity and all these things. And
he talks about like a cynical humor. Like Huey Lewis.
Well, because he just so attaches to what the music is and what it means to him because he doesn't have any... How shall we say, emotional maturity of any sort to the point where he totally latches on to what that is.
This is one of those times when I wish I was more well-versed in music.
What do you mean?
Any kind of like pop music and stuff, no freaking clue.
Oh, really?
Really? Yeah.
Really?
I'm missing some nuance here, yeah.
Oh.
Well, that's why you bring me on to talk about martial arts and...
And not music.
Stuff like that. That's what I do.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know you didn't know popular music.
Yeah, not really.
Martial arts, I mean, and Vivaldi.
Oh, what?
I was making a classical music joke that you only
know.
Oh, like.
Yes. No, I like...
In Too Deep is the greatest song of the 80s.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Orchestral soundtracks.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to the crazy film.
As he's having her dance. And I like how he just kind of slides from one thing into the other.
Right. Now, wait, Christy and Sabrina, are those made up? I forget those are people we've already met in the plot.
No, this is the first time.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if he was trying to suggest that they were different people.
It goes on about the music. And then he comes out with this. Hang on. When he talks to Sabrina. In the air tonight. it's like a thesis.
Exactly.
It's like, Sabrina, don't just stare at it. Eat it. I'm like,
he jumps right from that into that.
Oh, man.
I stress the word artist. After this movie, I can never hear this song and not think about this scene.
Oh, were you listening to it a lot before?
It's my ringtone.
Man.
That's awesome.
Oh my God. I can see him doing the channeling right now. I hate to say it. I really do.
Little Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise.
I didn't say it. I did not say those words.
We'll say it.
We'll say it. No.
What's that? There was that pointing. The pointing of the arm did it. It's like, I'm pointing at you.
Oh, right.
Actually.
Yeah, that's the best.
Holy.
Oh, yeah, really. What I really like, actually, strangely enough, just in terms of filmic form, how, you know, they didn't try and fancy up the viewfinder. It's just, it's like it's in a smaller black and white image.
Mm. Right.
Yeah. Look at the camera.
So is the video, I guess, supposed to be part of the false alibi for Paul Allen also? And why would he? Why would he tell them that?
No.
I don't know. I'm trying to put it together in my mind. It's been a while since I saw this movie. Also,
wire hanger.
There's the wire hanger.
He's got some random stuff in there, like the hole punch.
Is there a hole punch in
there? Yeah, there was a hole punch.
Yeah, there was a hole punch.
It wasn't even a leather punch. Like, it was just a tiny little paper.
I love that he went so far as to let them sleep and think that everything was done and then wake them up.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Oh, and by the way...
Okay, this is where I basically started leaving off. Mm-hmm. So this is all kind of new to me.
Is that true? Sorry.
Yes. No.
I don't follow the show, but is this actor in...
Josh Lucas.
Josh Lucas. Is he in Mad Men? Or am I just... Think
no, you're thinking of someone else. Mm. But Josh Lucas was actually in Poseidon.
Oh, okay. I
like this. Yeah. Okay. And here's basically he's talking about, you know, I guess it's two sides of his personality. Yeah. He thinks it's funny. They're looking at him like, that's not funny. Oh, I did catch more of this scene. That's right.
He could only be more gay if he had, like, a sparkly jacket and a funny hat. That's really all.
Well, I don't think he's hiding it. That's the whole thing.
Right.
But he's engaged.
I find his character comical.
But he's engaged to...
It's the bow tie.
Right. He's engaged to Courtney.
Right, right.
That's right.
Yeah, really, it kind of is.
Okay, no, I did see this scene. I love this. I love the music, and he's just like so... Like,
I wish Christian Bale would get that mole removed from his eye. It bothers me.
Oh, really?
So the abs aren't good enough? The mole's got to go.
They balance each other out.
Mm.
Wow. He is tightly wound.
Ah, the standard killer gloves.
Really?
Well, it seems like every time that there's somebody who, you know, will randomly enact, like, terrible violence on someone, they always have some kind of short black gloves in their pocket. Yeah.
And this, I didn't see where this was going. I mean, I didn't see where this was going to go at all until... now. It's like, what? And he's like, what are you? And he's just, I don't know how to deal with this.
The only defense that works.
So why did he hesitate? Why didn't he do it?
Well, here again, we have the question is, has he really killed anyone?
Well,
so.
So then the question is, maybe this was the closest he ever came.
Exactly. That's a returning gag in the book.
He's
constantly going to return some videotapes.
Oh, interesting.
I love the music. This music.
Who did the score in this movie?
Hang on. Let me check on the internets.
The internets.
Internet knows everything.
Another bit that I seem to remember is he's a big fan in the book. He's a big fan of Jamie Gertz, right? In that one,
yeah,
who's in Lesson Zero.
Yeah,
that's Bret Easton Ellis being funny.
Did anybody read Glamorama?
I have not.
I couldn't get through it.
Really?
Yeah, I wasn't that into it.
John Cale did the music.
Rules of Attraction, I love. That might be my favorite of his books.
I really like that book. Yeah. Actually, yeah, it was really cool. I liked it better than Lesson Zero.
Returning videotapes again. Yep.
Actually, the DP shot Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs.
And received from whom?
It was a laugh riot.
That's right. Africa. Very, very socially conscious. What's with... He's like hypnotized. So that's interesting. Why?
Well, because remember the CD he was playing at Paul Allen's when he killed him was that CD. So now he's wondering, is he on to him? You know, or is, you know.
But he wasn't at Paul. Did he kill Paul Allen at Paul Allen's place? No, he killed him at his place.
Right. Oh, at his place. That's right.
But
him
at his place. The detective might have gone and talked to people that live near him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I never even put that together. I was just thinking, God, he's just being weird for the detective because he makes all sorts of stuff up when he talks to him. So,
yeah, but that's a good point, though. But he seemed to be caught by surprise, and like I can't tell the truth that I like Huey Lewis. So I don't
yeah,
know.
That's
I
mean, yeah, that's kind of.
It's an interesting other dimension. There's the
random.
Here's the plush cat. Okay, this is the last scene I left off at after this, I think. We'll see. But what I was left with from this scene was that she's thinking of committing suicide because she asks to see him before Easter. And he's just kind of, you know, he's totally wrapped up in his own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think she's bored.
He probably, he's really, okay, I don't know. That was the impression I got from
all this. Unhappy, but rich and bored, like a lot of Bret Easton Ellis characters are sort of this vapid.
Oh, very, very, you know, I mean, that's his whole thing.
Miserable. Yeah.
What is the author's background?
He's from that whole environment.
I would think he would have to be, or he would have to have something, some kind of take on it in some other way.
Like, well, he also attended, I think it was, I want to say Bennington College or something, but yeah, he spent time back east, like a very old preppy college, mm-hmm, which plays into a lot of his characters and stuff. Exactly, he's rich, yeah, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely he had to witness it all.
Mm. Oh,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, here, just definitely, she's like, he's just, this is the person he actually feels the most for, and he barely feels anything for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's sort of the anti-Fitzgerald, you know, rather than glorifying this sort of world, he has the exact opposite take on it.
So you're saying he's like Gatsby, this guy? Anyway, a very weird Gatsby?
That Patrick Bateman, or who are we talking about now?
Patrick Bateman.
No, I wouldn't quite go that far, but okay. The worlds are sort of similar from
worlds,
different perspectives.
This is vaguely reminiscent of Rocky Horror Picture Show, the whole club environment.
This whole thing about it. Oh, my God. I remember this whole thing. Back when the whole talk about AIDS was coming out and what wasn't. And
everybody doing blow in the bathroom.
Everybody doing blow.
The stalls are there for that.
They're not
blow
there.
Stalls.
Yeah.
That's right. It's all blow stalls.
This whole part's in the book. This is how his ATM card doesn't work because he's used it too much to be cutting up coke.
Oh, wow. <Huh. laughs>
And I think in the beginning scene when they all throw their cards on, I think you can see some of them were kind of worn out.
Ah.
I think I caught that. Oh, but that's a whole, it's like a gag in the book.
Wow, that's a minutia. Yeah. Interesting.
Actually, it's interesting here because in this scene, he actually wants to be social. Mm-hmm. He's like, never mind. Let's just focus on what we want to do. It doesn't ruffle Patrick at all. That's mm-hmm. the interesting thing. He's cool in the situation. Steroids.
Such a major, like, I keep forgetting anytime, like, until I see another, like, 80s sort of period piece, if we can call them that this soon, but
sure.
Oh, this
absolutely
is.
I forget the drug culture, you know, that was around then. It was just
oh, then
rampant.
The coke was,
especially with, you know, the upper crust yuppie types.
It's Duncan, it still is.
No, I know, but
it's changed now.
I don't know if it's because it was new or because it was, I don't know, well, more popular or more okay to
money.
Talk about, or was, before they had more laws about drugs or something. But
it was the conspicuous consumption. They had money to spend on the drugs.
Right,
and
okay.
And so coke became definitely
a drug of status.
And also,
but more of a social thing. Like, it wasn't like...
Well, because coke will make you social. I've never done coke, but
no,
it'll just make you go... Mm.
Oh. That's interesting.
I'm getting stares around the table. No.
You've never
yes, it
done
does.
Coke?
I've no, never done coke. But definitely status, yeah.
I've done status, but not coke.
I don't know if I've done status.
Was that a metaphorical, like, social comment?
No.
Or is that the
no,
name of the drug?
She was being honest.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I don't know. Her eyes almost look like a vampire right here, like an Anne Rice vampire.
It's funny. She's got a very flat delivery.
Yeah.
Now
flat-ish.
Could be a bad
I know in period pieces, Sarah, it was you who had the problem with that one film with hair, right? I
think it was that was not me. That was someone
was
else but hair. Wow. So the implication is that he's killed her.
Yes.
Wow. We just kind of skipped over
it. It's a trophy.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
That's my favorite part in the entire book.
I like
how
he's putting bone and meat.
That's my favorite part.
Is that in the book?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. She's interesting in this film. I'm like, why is she in this part? It's really interesting. It is.
Interesting character.
Well, she's in love with him, if I remember right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I thought I remembered there was some kind of romantic connection between them.
And this is actually when it first kicks up. And up until now, she's just kind of in the background. And now, actually, it looks like he's... I like that he's framed underneath, like, an empty white frame with sunglasses on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting. Here he's trying to basically get her to cop the status, what he does. Mm-hmm. You know, where do you want to go? What restaurant?
I knew she was going to say Dorsey.
Yeah. And it's like the one place he can't get in. I like how now she's shot from further behind. She's smaller in the frame.
What's he doing over there?
But she's wearing high heels just like he told her to.
Yeah,
true.
That dreadful jacket.
Didn't leave his name. Oh, it's the big shoulders.
Oh, I know. The shoulders always throw me whenever I see that.
Oh, wow.
What else has she been in again?
She's done all sorts of...
her face. Oh. Oh, wow. Nice.
Oh.
That's the girl from last night. Or the blonde, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that.
She was in Kids, and
that's where she started.
What's the director's
was in Kids,
name?
Yeah.
Does all of his movies.
Oh, Larry Clark.
Yeah,
she did, but she's done a few other things too. It's interesting. The lighting is contrasty. Definitely, they work with not making it flat. Definitely, there's a darker side to the face. Even here, you can see, especially with him. Now, I remember reading about this scene, actually.
Mm.
So I only have a vague idea of where it goes. But clearly it seems like he's judging her. Right now, he's evaluating or he's picking her apart. It's like the homeless guy in the alley. I've now plucked you out, and I'm now going to evaluate to see whether you deserve to live or not. Only I don't know what his criteria is.
He's
oh my god! Is that a belt sander?
Probably.
It's a second reference to serial killers.
That's right.
Right.
And she doesn't even know who Ted Bundy was. Oh, that's right, because Ted Bundy was pretty recent.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
The first one I think he brought up was Ed Gein. About the head on a stick.
That's interesting. So she had known Ted Bundy, and then he would have taped her up?
Right. Because his lead-in line didn't have the effect he wanted.
Right.
I have a question. What do you think the telescope's for?
Status.
Is it? Was it a status thing then? To
if I lived in that apartment, I would totally have
one. Play a little bit in the
I know what I would use it for, but
it's probably what he uses it for. But,
yeah. Oh, now he's pulled out his weapon of choice. Oh, it's the nail gun.
The nail gun.
Monstrous.
So he's this stops him.
Well, it seems to me like he's trying to set up the situation into something that he's picturing, and he keeps being thwarted because the setup keeps getting interrupted.
Okay, so it's not a matter of he wants killers. It's just like he's trying to follow a script, a ritual of some kind,
and maybe that keeps changing. But yeah, that's what it seems like.
Oh, okay, that's.
Because he stopped, because she didn't know who Ted Bundy was. Now he stopped because
that was part of the script, right? Yeah. And part of the script was not getting interrupted,
right,
by the phone call in his mind.
Mm-hmm.
This is handheld. That's interesting. Very steady handheld.
Interesting observation. I didn't notice.
That's interesting that he has sympathy for her.
You know, I could totally see her, by the way, being a part of the same casting call as the demure secretary type in Mad Men also. She's got the same persona, sort of.
Mm.
This is interesting. He's saying one thing and she's hearing a different thing.
Exactly.
Clearly, yeah. Yeah. And she's talking emotionally. He's talking, that's not what I'm talking
about. At least
your
problem.
But once again, it's interesting that somehow he's sympathetic to her.
Yeah. It shows the signs that he's not a complete sociopath, because if he was a complete sociopath, he wouldn't have any feelings towards her whatsoever. She would just be another plaything.
Hmm.
So, just observing here, but I haven't seen him actually do anything relating to work at all.
He
shows up to his office and he just piddles around. And he goes on lunch appointments and goes to dinner, and that's pretty much his life.
And it's established that he doesn't have to work, and I think they talk about it in that first scene in the cab, and she said, "Why do you work?" And he says, "I want to fit in."
Right.
Why doesn't he quit his job? Yeah.
Right.
Right after she says he can do whatever he wants because her dad owns a company. Mm-hmm. That's, yeah. Interesting. Nice. Of course, everyone's the same.
Right.
That's right. Oh, was Marcus Halberstam the other guy in the room with the same glasses at the time?
I can't remember.
Okay.
The what? Which scene?
Where the three of them all looked the same in that scene.
No. There was a scene where he went into... there was a scene where they went into the fact that the guy mixes up him and Marcus.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the camera panned over and showed
that's
Marcus.
That's what I thought. Yeah, okay. So now I have a good idea. That's what I thought.
Interesting. His face in this scene looks
really
very
sweaty.
Plastic.
Oh.
Like it looks like
he's
still
sweaty.
Has his mask on almost.
He's sweating because of the interview.
Oh, those teeth are great.
P.S. William Dafoe never looks different.
Yeah.
Like, I think he might be a mutant or something.
He doesn't age? Oh, here's Christy again.
Christy. He's starting to look like Madonna. As they age, they start to look like each other. Think about it. Or watch Body of Evidence.
Symbiosis going on there.
It's like that sinewy gap tooth thing. Oh, honey.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. How does she know who the driver is?
That's a good point.
Drivers here, you're safe. Yeah, right, that's right. Pretty thin.
Because drivers, they protect people. Especially ones that drive limos for rich freaking yuppies.
I used to drive a town car. You pretty much ignore whatever goes on in the back.
Basically.
Well, I mean, he's right. It will be nothing like last time. He's not lying.
I thought, I guess, that somebody was in my town car and they started using a chainsaw on the person in the back. I might have something to say about that.
Mm. Yeah.
Right. Well, on top of which, I mean, the guy could be on his payroll. What if it's just his personal driver? The guy could be his bodyguard / driver. I love how we're all quiet because it's like high level creepage right now.
I've never seen it, so.
Oh, right.
I'm in unknown territory right now.
I'm kind of jealous.
Really?
Right? Yeah.
You read the book first, right?
I did.
Okay. Again?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is the Genevieve Turner, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's got a new apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Which is
Paul Allen's apartment.
Right.
That's what I figured. And she still thinks he's Paul Allen, quote unquote.
Did you go to Dalton? Oh.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, she's revving up the needed anger.
Yeah.
So now the scenario is coming together for him, I imagine.
Well, he put ecstasy, I think, in the book. I think they said it's ecstasy in the wine.
Right.
Is that what it is?
Was ecstasy around already in the 80s?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Late 80s?
I think it was called it MDMA.
When it was legal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The therapy.
I didn't know it was legal.
MDMA was legal until like the early 90s.
Never heard of MDMA either.
MDMA, yeah. It was actually used by psychiatrists, yeah.
I'll be darned.
Opens you up.
Yeah.
Ah. Now, was it by prescription? Or was it?
Yeah, it was prescription drug.
Okay.
And then they basically made it illegal, and the rest is history. Now, you know. Paul Normans. And once again, the mention of a restaurant or a bar, it's right. The status thing.
Halcyon.
Oh my God.
Just waiting for her to bolt.
Yeah.
I love the look on her face. Like, she knows, just like, Yeah. Or she thinks she knows what's coming.
Where it's going, yeah.
Actually, you know, the woman who plays Christy is British.
Mm.
Her name's Kara Seymour.
Interesting. What else has she done?
Hang on. She was in An Education recently.
Oh, that.
The notorious Betty Page.
Oh, here we go. He's going into the music thing again.
She was in Gangs of New York. Oh, my God. Here's a Whitney Houston thing.
One of my favorite lines in a movie.
But that you listen to Whitney Houston and she's laughing and she's finding it really funny. And does he really mean it, that he really likes Whitney Houston?
Oh, yeah. This is one of those things in the book that's like an entire chapter is on Whitney Houston.
Pages.
Oh, my gosh. How long is the book?
It's not that long. Like 200-300 pages. Now, I like how there's an orchestral version playing in the background, and they're listening to him.
Now, the drugs have to be kicking in by now.
Yeah.
But they clearly are affecting her differently. Drank more of it, you think?
Well, yeah, because there's a scene where he's saying, Christy, you're not drinking. That's a very fine Chardonnay. You're not drinking.
Right.
Oh, he just said that in this, too?
Yeah, he said that, you know, like a minute ago.
I remember the last time he was saying that's the whole thing.
Oh, did he say it last time?
He said it the last one, yeah.
Oh, okay. I think this one he just told her to drink.
Wow, who's wearing that scene?
I like that he has his sneakers on.
Yeah. she's going to try to make her escape good before...
She's learned not to fall asleep.
Oh, my God. Holy crap. Okay, that's pretty explicit.
Right? Oh, yeah. Forgot about that.
And sneakers.
Right?
Holy shit.
And she actually gets out. So now this is reminiscent of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre thing he was watching earlier.
Yep.
Oh.
So if this is just playing out in his mind, this is totally directly related to that.
Goes back to the scenario.
He even has the chainsaw.
Right. Is he naked?
Yes.
Yes, he is.
Does that shock you, Serge?
No, it's just... Just checking. He just should be careful when he's running with a chainsaw naked.
Covered in
That's
mud.
All.
Yeah.
There's
like,
really...
Like he's targeting her with it.
Yeah.
It's like...
There's a funny video on YouTube that plays this scene with the Benny Hill with the Yakety Sax in the background.
Dang.
Is that what it's called? A Yakety Sax?
Oh, yeah.
That's the name of the song.
Oh, jeez. Oh, he got her?
Yes, he did. There's so much of the contrast between the white and the blood red. Mm-hmm. You have the sneakers and everything else.
Was that black flowing out?
Oh, I forgot where he was doing the drawings. That's right.
She doesn't
She's just oblivious. She wasn't even listening.
No.
Wow. You got to wonder if conversations like this actually happen. I mean, chances are it's happened a few times anyway. Mm. All the people in all the world.
It's also one of those things, you know, is he actually saying those things in those moments?
Right.
Is he saying something?
Or is this what's going through his mind that he wants to say?
Yeah.
Is he really doing the drawing and not really saying, or vice versa, or who knows?
It's like, has a scene come up when a girl asks what he does and he says murders and executions? And she says, oh, mergers and acquisitions.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
Sorry, I stepped away for a second. What did you just say?
He broke up with her.
Stuff.
He broke up with her.
Wow. She should be grateful.
At the same time, he was talking about... He was talking about committing homicidal behavior and wanted to on a massive scale and just wouldn't work out. And she just totally wasn't hearing it.
She was distracted by something. She thought it was a joke.
It's like, I just don't really care.
Twin Towers. Now, the interesting thing is what we're 120 into it. And what I was going to comment is that until, of course, this scene, it feels like, I mean, things have been happening and escalating, but just it's just very small escalations. Mm-hmm. It's like I don't see where the arc has been going. And now that he's broken up with her, I can see what, maybe some of it where he's maybe coming apart
mm-hmm.
a little bit. But this is
a key moment in the book. I can't remember how that plays out in the movie, though.
Oh, man. What? Okay.
Oh, wow. Yeah, note to self. If someone has a gun that looks like they're about to shoot a cat, don't walk up to them and tell them to stop.
Right.
Just kind of leave.
Okay.
So this is the first hint that we have
something
this is
the first big hint that,
really
the, that our narrator may not be.
Thing. He's hallucinating at this point.
Right, something.
Well, yeah, feed me a stray cat. So
reality is starting to come apart.
And with the hints you guys have given me, I'm like, okay, so let's see.
I wonder if we hadn't have brought that up, if you would have questioned.
I wouldn't have. That would have been the first thing to... Now here, I mean...
Now, this is interesting.
Yeah.
I got to make a gun reference here. Yes. The gun he has is a Glock. Those would have been brand spanking new in 1987.
And
it blows the thing up.
There's a little bit of a commentary on movies there, too, is how easily they blow up.
Right, of course. Well, and,
well, no, because I think he's saying there's no way that could have happened. And he looks at the gun like, that could have done that.
Right. So, actually, this is interesting because now he's actually going, maybe... What's going on? It's not even making... Well, even the feed me a stray cat thing didn't make sense to him.
Mm-hmm.
It's not... So what the interesting thing still is, what's going on in his mind is he's realizing, am I going crazy?
His own narrative is sort of unwinding.
Right.
Yeah, Mr. Smith.
Mr. Smith?
All right.
Oh, my God.
Oh, and just so people listening to this don't think I'm totally psycho, there was a point to my saying it was brand new. That would have been just as like yuppie as anything else we've seen in him so far. Mm. So it's totally appropriate that he has that gun.
Oh, the Glock?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because
I love that
not
you
everybody
know that.
Would have even had access to that yet. Like it was developed
so it was
in Austria and it was, you know, issued there first, but that would have been like the cutting edge. It was the very first gun with a polymer frame. A plastic frame.
I'm impressed.
So, oh man.
And now he's...
Just for a second, you think he's going to hit his head on the metal thing, too.
Is that the same building? Or I guess it's... two different buildings that look the same.
We haven't actually seen him go into the lobby of his building, have we?
Yeah, but so we've seen him in the hallway. Film,
we've seen him in the hallway and
but
inside
those,
the
those apartment. Two buildings looked identical.
Close, yeah.
And he was called Mr. Yeah. Smith, so what's going on? And well, of
did
course,
that guy just call him Mr. Smith?
No, the other guy did. Okay. See, look at the translight. So it's like, the translight's kind of flat, but actually in the context of everything you're saying, that could actually make sense, the kind of the artificiality of the translight out there. Wow. This is really interesting. Wow.
That's in the book. That's the one with the rat and the,
and
the PVC pipe.
So that's the one they...
There's a few. He kills like a little girl in a park.
In the zoo. In Central Park Zoo, right?
Wow.
So he's just completely unlosted. He's unwound.
And you remember the scene with the two hookers with the batteries?
Oh, yeah.
So he's confessing to everything. Oh, wow.
But notice that we haven't heard anyone else on the other end of the phone.
Oh, no, I know. I think he's leaving.
He's leaving a message.
I ate some of their brains and I tried to cook. Well, I guess this is referring to the stuff in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say if you left a message about this, and it's true, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. You're going to get away with it. But yeah, but also we're just seeing his mind unwinding, and I guess we have just to wait and see, because this is where I am right now. I don't know what's going to happen next. This is.
I think in terms of the story and the satire, I don't think it actually matters whether or not he does it. I think it's still, or maybe, I don't know, like the ambiguity kind of, I don't think it's that ambiguous, actually. I mean, I know what I think from reading the book and seeing the movie, but I think you could think either way and still have it be an effective, good story. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I think it is interesting. Also, his performance is great. I'm just curious. Like, he's like, okay, I've just did a major info dump. And
I think what really, I think now that I think about it, what really sells my opinion on it is the response we get from the person he leaves a message for.
Right.
And that was his lawyer. Mm-hmm. Who I guess we're going. I mean, we will eventually.
And not even so much even the content of what he says as what he thinks of Patrick Bateman.
Right. Actually, the interesting thing is now we're back to the beginning now.
Right.
So at the beginning, we saw him.
Right,
you know,
basically.
Once again, it's the grooming scene.
But my first question is: he was at his office building. There was apparently a helicopter looking in the window, and then the next morning, normal routine.
Mm-hmm.
Here we right.
go. Right. Well, fascinating.
I think the car blowing up kind of was a bit of the screen said "feed me a stray cat" was a bit
right,
of a clue.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
and how can you drag
a
bloody duffel bag through a lobby?
Well, right. Exactly.
And a chainsaw in the hallway with screaming.
Right, and she's pounding on people's doors.
Yeah.
And so I guess he's going back to the scene of
the body dump apartment, Paul Allen's apartment,
where the door wasn't even closed all the way.
Yeah, what's up with that? What, he ran naked home?
This is an important scene here, too.
Yeah, I'm getting that. Wow. Was he even ever there? He still got the mask on. Or better yet, are they even there?
Or was Paul Allen ever there?
Ooh, that's a goodie.
Wow. But I love that they still don't make it 100% because, look, they've completely painted everything. So they
right. But, and the realtor's reaction is really interesting.
But they couldn't have painted everything in one day.
Who knows how long it's been?
Yeah, but getting rid of bodies, no.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Huh? I think this is part of his delusion.
Or maybe this is the first reality in a long time.
Why would...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she's just suspicious of him because there was no way.
Well, think about it. If this is straight up, then it totally makes sense. He's talking all this crazy... He's right. standing in there.
Right.
With a
talking
mask.
Talking about some random guy with a mask.
Right.
You know, talking about seeing the ad in the That's Times. True. There wasn't one.
But right. still, they don't 100% give it away there with the paint and everything. And in the book, he says that there was a smell of, like, flowers, like it was trying to cover up.
Oh, yeah. Odor, which so. I could see him, yeah.
So, and who knows who Paul Allen's justifying. Family is. You know, yeah. maybe yeah. they...
But, of course, someone with psychosis could have just smelled that lady's perfume and made that up in their mind.
But I think that ambiguity really... is something that really is part of the book and makes part of what really makes it interesting too.
Right.
Mm. Yeah.
And that was the scene that really confused me the most the first few times.
In the movie or book?
The book.
Okay. The book for sure.
It's like, what?
This is the first time she's... this makes no sense to her.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Wow.
So... Well, okay. All right. I'll just keep on watching. All right. Because I have the obvious question that, you know, if Paul Allen never got killed, then wouldn't Paul Allen still be around?
They'll address that. Give it time.
Oh, yeah. I can only imagine. It's just a question that's gently around my head. And now this is...
You don't want to do that.
I'm assuming this is all objective now. This is like objective reality, not what he's imagining. If I'm watching this, this is
I would totally snoop if I were her.
An omniscient.
Isn't this the first scene?
This is a little
where
break
he's not
because,
in it.
Yeah, this is we're breaking away from his.
This is omniscient.
Yeah,
yeah. This is now we're now getting essentially the God's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even look, he's disheveled because in his mind, would he ever see himself as disheveled? I don't know.
Yeah, good point.
Or maybe he does, because that's what it's all about.
And how easily he slips back into that
right
molded sort of conversation.
This whole thing with getting reservations. Mm-mm. He's right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, this was 2000. That's right. They knew this
was
going.
Well, and the Chinese.
Well, Chinese is now. That happened in the past 10 years. Oh, that's his lawyer?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. this guy's completely disconnected from what he, the message he left.
But he just talked about Bateman in...
Yeah, he doesn't realize... Again, it's identity confusion.
Right.
He's not Bateman?
He is Bateman. He just doesn't... So is if essentially his opinion of Bateman is such that he's so ineffectual that he could never imagine him hurting anyone.
This is so confusing. Is this the lawyer they left the message for? Mm-hmm. Wouldn't the lawyer know him? I'm so confused.
I mean,
I was expecting that. Yeah, the break, and we're at 1:33. Okay, in the movie.
So there we see yet another bit of evidence. And here she's in love with this man who's obviously very disturbed.
Wow. I pity the poor prop person who had to draw all that stuff.
A lot of those are straight from the book.
Actually,
oh, really?
All those drawings?
I thought you said there were no pictures in the book.
No, I meant some of the things. Those drawings are scenes.
Or I could see Christian Bale actually saying, I'll draw those.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just part of the character. Totally.
So, pictures.
Yeah, really.
He's an actor. Are you kidding?
Yeah. We were talking about Reagan there.
I know. Me too.
Okay. And now we get the first shot of Patrick. We haven't even had any shots of Patrick. That's interesting. He's like, I'm crazy and I know it. That's interesting. They're comparing Reagan to Patrick Bateman. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Huh.
Also, this is not an exit. That sign up there, those are the last words of the book.
Yeah, it's a reference to Jean-Paul Sartre novel.
Yeah, no exit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm.
Do they do the thing in the beginning with the Divine Comedy quote in the movie? I can't remember. Because in the book, there's something spray painted on the wall that says, it's in the Divine Comedy about the abandon all hope ye who enter here.
Mm.
It's spray painted on the wall in the beginning of the book, on one of the buildings.
Yeah, I forgot about
that. So maybe go ahead. No, go ahead. You go ahead.
No, that's pretty much it.
Well, what I was going to say, I mean, in a way, you know, if he's imagined all this has all been a run up to him actually becoming a serial killer. In other words, he's only imagined all this stuff. And then he's just basically saying there's nowhere else for me to go. And the only way for him to actually go further is to actually do something. And this is what I'm reading so far, and I haven't seen anything more.
There's a line in the book that I don't think makes it in the movie.
Oh, is this it? Oh,
yeah. My God.
You like that?
There's a line
I'm going to stick to what I just said. Basically, this has all been a run-up to him actually starting to become a serial killer.
I don't know.
He just said there's no more barriers for me to pass. That's it. In other words, if this has all been in my head, now the killing's going to really begin, because I thought the killing had started. It hadn't. And oh my God, I'm crazy. All right, let's go.
He's going to be a lot more careful than he was in his imagination. Cause
right. I'm sorry, Michael.
There's a line in the book that I don't think makes it in the movie, where I can't remember exactly what he says. He says something to the effect about how he feels alone in the world or something. But he puts it in such a way that it really kind of sums up where his, you know, his, where he's really at, and not just this sort of these things that he dictates in the narrative and that sort of thing. That his real, the kind of sadness and loneliness of the character that's underneath all this, you know, layers of psychosis and whatever else.
So we get a real sense of his emotions going on.
Yeah.
Like
a little short passage towards the end of the book where it's just like this sort of brutally honest moment, and it really kind of tells you everything about where he's really at.
Hmm.
Interesting that they didn't have that sort of wrap-up in this.
They had a bit. I think that's supposed to be his phone conversation before it kind of goes wonky towards the end with the secretary, where he's sort of just bare and honest with her, and then according to the end, he says, stop being so serious or whatever it is he says.
Sad.
Yeah.
But for there's that few moments there where he's just sort of being sort of honest about, you know, that he can't go on and that sort of thing. So I don't think it does it quite as it says it as directly as it does in the book. But I think that's what that conversation is supposed to accomplish, is that moment.
Wow.
Hmm. Some
kind of movie.
Yeah. It's wonderfully complex in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
This might have been like, I don't know how to say it. This might have been a real like cultural like touch point if it had come out in the 80s.
Hmm.
You know?
But I don't think it could have come out. I mean, because this was written early 90s,
yeah,
right?
No, I'm just saying, let's say that it had been written earlier or something, or at the time, and then made into a movie right then. I'm just saying, I wonder how people in the 80s in that position would have taken this film, and how different it would have been in the culture.
I don't know.
I mean, I think it's better to have a bit of distance to be able to look.
I think the book
back
itself, though, is a product of the... I mean, one of the chapters in the book is called The End of the 80s.
Right.
So it really is taking in the 80s as a whole from, you know, after the fact, not being in the middle of it, I think.
Well, right. I like sci-fi. I like time travel. I'm just like, if we could time travel this movie back to then, I wonder how they would have reacted.
Because it would have been like looking in a mirror, kind of. I don't know how it would have done in terms of movie making, but I think we would have had kind of the same. I mean, everyone was basically aware of the conspicuous consumption and relatively fairly critical of it if you were of that mind. Well, I mean, you know, everyone was aware of what was going on. But I think it works better as a look back because, with all the music that was in it, you're able to go like, as I was saying, this film probably better than most films have evoked an era better.
Well, I think we actually have an example of something like that. If you look at the Natural Born Killers and when that came out, that was very much in that time period, in a movie that was commenting in that time period in a dark, satirical, violent way. And for the most part, a lot of people couldn't see past the violence and couldn't really see the satire. I think that
the one time
the
I
case.
Watched it, I was definitely in that category. It was a long time ago, though.
Yeah.
It was before I really
I think this movie might have been in that case, you know,
you
sort of viewed that way, that people might not have been able to get past the violence really see the satire.
Yeah, that is possible.
Well, we've given good examples of Gloria Steinem.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, if you're looking
at this, others.
In a cultural/psychological sense, like, you got to wonder, okay, we had an insight into that guy's mind. how many of those other people that were in his circle that seemed like they had it all together were having similar psychoses. And, you know, on top of that, I wonder how many people could, in some way at least, relate to that level of psychosis that were in that at the time. I think that's kind of what I was more meaning. It's just like, I wonder if that would have spoken to anyone at the time, or if this is just more of an artistic sort of machination of that the author's take on that.
I think it's the latter. I think it's it was him basically saying all those people would never go to the lengths that Patrick Bateman thought that he went to, but they are just as bad as what Patrick Bateman is in their shallowness and pursuit of status and what, you know, what restaurant they're going to go to and get a reservation at, and attention to needless detail and pursuit of that, then they might as well just be serial killers. But they kind of haven't flipped into the delusion that Patrick Bateman flipped into, the delusion of being a serial killer.
Well, the other thing that Ellis sort of writes about that I like a lot is that all the characters in his books, and you see this in life, but not nearly so much as you do in his books, everybody's talking to one another, but they're all kind of in their own worlds that are completely divorced of everybody else. So they're having conversations, but they're not really saying anything to one another. It's everybody's caught in their own little movie, in their own little drama.
And they don't listen.
Yeah, and they don't hear the things that the other person is saying. And so with Patrick Bateman, you get that, like, under a microscope where everything's completely blown, where his movie is just out of control, and his whole world is completely out of control. And that's one of the really interesting things about the book and the movie.
And even when he's, like, displaying these minor, from their perspective, minor symptoms of weirdness, they just sort of gloss over it. Because they're still, like you're saying, they're still in their
still caught in their own movie.
Right.
Which I think is a very big strength of Ellis's, is that he realizes that people are mostly like that. I mean, people talk and they listen, but people are mostly, you're in your world and you interact with other people's worlds. And some with more success than other. And he took that to the nth degree. Someone who completely is divorced from everyone in their worlds and can only construct fantasies out of it. And I still think this was a setup for him to actually start killing.
And maybe
that's an interesting idea. I've never thought of it that way.
I think it was just that last thing he said, that everything's done. I'm past all thresholds. And so for me, I'm just reading, you know, he realizes that now he knows he's crazy, and now he knows it's all out of control, but he still needs to feed that. That's the whole thing. He still needs to feed that impulse. And his imagination, his delusion is not imagination.
But can he
delusion.
Actually do it? Like we were talking in the bathroom scene with Lewis, when he kind of gingerly put his hand on
his
neck.
And the lawyer's response that he's such an ineffectual guy. You know,
and a dork.
Yeah. That, you know, does he have what it takes to really be a serial killer?
But if you look, I hate to say it, if you look at all the serial killers, likely they were at that some point. But I mean, it's exactly the point to be argued. It's like,
well
hey,
I think that
I mean, not everyone's a Ted Bundy. You know, you got, for every Ted Bundy, there's a John.
To me, that's almost kind of part of the commentary on the culture, though, is that here he's built up, here he's this guy who's part of this culture, and he's, you know, the serial killer or whatever, but you know, he's completely ineffectual, and that's kind of coming back to it all, is that ultimately this whole sort of environment is, while boasting the restaurants and everything, there's this kind of ineffectual quality to it all, that it's all empty and hollow, and there's nothing behind it.
Well, and he's ineffectual in making an impact on anyone, because throughout the movie they always think he's someone else.
Yeah, exactly, as do, you know, so many of the other characters.
And he's interpreted as, you know, he's not there.
I'm going to sound dumb right now.
Go ahead.
But
I'm thinking. I'm
very
still processing.
The very end scene with the lawyer where he's talking to him, lawyer is referring to Bateman in the third person.
Well,
but
yeah,
then he goes and sits down with his friends again who refer to him as Bateman.
Right.
Now, does that mean that the lawyer doesn't really know who he is?
Or maybe he is not.
Yeah,
similarly to other people mistaking him? Well, is that right? Or is it something else?
I'm
lawyer thought he was Davis.
Yeah, but why did he think it was Davis? It's his lawyer. How could his lawyer not know who he is?
Because his lawyer is floating just as much as
he's
the
rest of
us.
He's like, we
talk
on the phone
all
the time.
And everybody looks the same.
Right.
So.
Okay, everyone looks the same. So in other words, he really is Patrick.
One question I have in watching the film is, I'm wondering if...
Because I would say... Go ahead.
You know, is the police investigator, is that guy even a real character, or is that just something that he's invented to create more drama in his own narrative.
It would have had to be. Now his assistant is real, because we were given she's the one omniscient view we had, that she existed and that she looked at his date book, which, by the way, only had those drawings and had no dates whatsoever, and it had no meetings whatsoever.
It had lunch and drink meetings.
Oh, it did have lunch.
Early on.
Yeah, early later. On then.
but then nothing. So she is real, but he could have imagined. I mean, what I'm saying is that actually he could have imagined she called him Patrick Bateman. Okay, I don't know. Maybe I'm picking
basically
too much on
any
the past
characters paper around him could have been imaginary to some degree or another.
Or they could have said, "Hey, Davis," and he would have heard Bateman, because that's who he is. Unless he is Patrick Bateman, he's nothing. But of course, in the Bret Easton Ellis universe,
no, he's Patrick Bateman.
He's Patrick Bateman. Okay, because there's Sean Bateman in Rules of Attraction.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
And we know. Okay, all right.
That creates much less of a twisty rabbit hole than I was creating in my mind with the lawyer scene.
So let's talk about American Psycho 2.
Oh.
It's on my Netflix queue. I have it coming in a few weeks.
I won't even watch it.
It's Mila Kunis. Do you know
and
anything about it?
It's completely unrelated to the story, except apparently she is a survivor of a Patrick Bateman college murder attempt, and now she just kills people.
But that means Patrick Bateman really did try and kill someone.
I thought there
well,
was
I think
two.
They take some liberties here with
yeah,
the story.
I think it's...
I mean, they're not being canon. Oh my, yeah. Oh, okay. So this is.
I'll let you know how the film is after I watch it.
Please let me know.
So
oh, I'm totally gonna.
Who got
it.
The rights to the film if the author isn't involved? Is author passed away or something?
No. Whoever buys the movie rights to the book and say, "Well, fine, we get the sequel rights, and that's what we're gonna do. We're gonna exercise them."
Fascinating.
Usually, if you sign those deals, you'll
no relation whatsoever.
There's usually. You know, in those deals, you'll have basically the rights to make the movie, and sequel rights, and remake rights.
But you don't always see that. Like, they must have gotten a really raw deal.
No, usually, I mean, they'll pay for most of that. They'll pay for any rights to make anything off of it. I mean, and then if you can withhold it or whatever, then you can, and you can negotiate with it. But clearly, in this case, they didn't.
Apparently, Ellis's only note on the film was that he didn't like the moonwalk. He would not have had Patrick Bateman do a moonwalk before.
But I could totally see that happening now.
I, on the other hand, love the moonwalk.
I thought it was pretty funny.
For sure.
Yeah, that was pretty... Hey, and that axe was very, very shiny. That should have been a clue.
Yeah.
How can that axe stay shiny? Okay, well... I'm going to have to watch this again at some point.
Yeah.
But
read the book.
Read the book.
Well, you know what? I think I'll do. I will read the book next.
Read the book and with a big plate of spaghetti.
Or travel with it so people on airplanes think you're strange.
Mm. You know, yeah,
I've done
really.
It before.
They didn't report you to the pilot?
I'd be on the bus in my morning
American
commute.
Psycho.
I'd get strange looks.
You take the bus to work?
No, when I was living in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And I'd be laughing out loud.
Mm-hmm.
So
nice. That always distinguishes you in a small,
that's a good
closed
one.
Public area.
See, what you do then is you take a book cover for another book and you put it inside it.
Nah. Nah.
Okay.
Leah, I admire your external psychosis.
Wait, you mean like put...
Thank you.
You mean like put the
here.
Anarchist cookbook on the outside of American Psycho?
It's much healthier.
Yeah, see, that would be a good idea. So did anything new come to anyone? In this viewing, especially my virgin viewing of this film,
it was really interesting watching it with someone who'd never seen it before and not familiar with the story. It was kind of refreshing.
Yeah,
just and like you know the questioning whether or not he'd done it. That was completely new to you.
Yeah,
it was new to me. When I first read it, I was like, oh wow, how did he get away with that? And then upon talking to people in subsequent viewings, it's like, oh, so I kind of noticed something new every time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I watch it.
Anything significant you noticed this time? That you didn't mention already?
No, I'm sure I'd mention it.
Okay.
Oh, I didn't.
Michael?
From this viewing, the only thing new I took away is wondering if the police investigator, if he's part of the whole world he's created, or if he's actually real. And I love that I don't know for sure. I love that about the...
What about the Chinese laundry people?
Real.
The Chinese laundry people with the sheets that have the big red stain on them. Maybe it is cranberry sauce.
Well, he does go to the laundromat several times to get sheets washed, and you know whether or not there's really blood stains on them or what's going on there, or whether he really does say, "I will kill you." to the people there.
Oh, I think he did, because she recognized what he was saying. It's like, you.
Yeah, but you notice, and I don't know if this is an editing thing or what, but he leans in really close and says, "I will kill you." We get her reaction, and then we cut back away, and he's like standing back a couple feet straight up and having a conversation that doesn't.
Interesting. So maybe that was
a little moment there. Yeah. So, yeah. And there's all the kinds of those wonderful little things. All left somewhat ambiguous.
Yes.
I think I was able to make more sense of the thing overall in my head, having some info about the book and all of that. That helped.
Right.
And then the last bit at the end, because I do tend to make things more complicated than they are in my mind, and assign more meaning to things than is really there. Sometimes I catch on to something, and sometimes not so much. And
right.
And so yes, it makes a bit more, has a bit more cohesion to me now.
This, you know, it's interesting. It comes in 2000, because there was a whole, in 1999, I'm going to spoil a couple of films for all of you out there. And if you haven't seen these films, you should have seen these films already. But, you know, of course there was Fight Club. And of course there was the whole, the idea of watching a movie and having to reevaluate it in the last 5 minutes, or case of Fight Club, 15 or 20 minutes. And reevaluate everything that's come before it. So there was Fight Club, of course, there was Sixth Sense. Mm. And I think there was another film in 99. I don't remember what it was, but I, you know, in a way this presents itself as another one of those things. Which
kind of Memento. Yeah, I was going to say Memento has a touch of that, but in a different way.
Yeah.
Well, there you were constantly reevaluating because we were going back in time. But yeah. But I mean the whole thing of like, no, this is not what was actually going on. Well, Mulholland Drive is like that too, you know, where I spend the last half hour realizing, oh my God, this is not what I thought it was, and then it's even crazier.
Mm-hmm.
So, yep. Spoilers. You just had some spoilers, so just go see the movies. They're classics. All right, so that was American Psycho.
Yes.
Yeah, we're just looking at a picture of a chainsaw on the menu screen. So
it looks like the type of chainsaw that a stormtrooper would have.
Good call.
Oh, one last thing about the nail, and this was a technicality about the nail gun that he held behind her head. That scene likely happened. I would say that scene Did he have the nail gun in his hand? And if you know anything about nail guns, because I know from working in shop and theater, basically the only way to make the nail gun actually work is you actually have to, the nozzle has to be pressed against the wood. Mm. So to actually make it work, you actually have to, we used to use a staple gun. But you'd actually have to pull it back so it can actually do it, because it has to essentially have that nozzle at the top has to be pushed back. So
it's a safety mechanism.
It's a safety. So if you would have pulled it, nothing would have happened.
In addition to which, it would have to be hooked up to a compressed air hose.
Compressed air hose or an electrical one. And it wasn't connected to anything. So I'm like, well, what's going to happen? I don't know. So just little technicalities.
Interesting.
It didn't give it away for me. It's okay. Okay. And also the poster I didn't like. But now I can maybe see what the poster maybe was about, but still.
Yeah.
All right. On that note.
If we determined the best poster shot would have been the him sitting with the cigar in his mouth, blood spattered across his face, with the body laying across in the foreground.
I think that would have been better.
I'd buy that poster.
I think that would have been a poster in Europe or something. Actually, if you look at some posters online, the European posters are interesting. The American posters are like, so. Okay, all right. That's going to be it for this week's Film Grok. American Psycho. I'm going to need to wash my brain after this one. Okay.
I have to go return some videotapes.
Go upgrade my business card.
I have to go make a reservation. Michael?
I'm hungry.
So on that note, this has been
Leah Tuttle.
And
Michael Smith.
And
Duncan K. Fraser.
And Serge Dolpierre. And this has been Film Grok. American Psycho Edition. Bye.